Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Between the Ropes podcast. On assignment basically out here on the West Coast, Brian Fritz along with Will Pruitt from ProWrestling.net. We have just finished up two straight days of New Japan Pro Wrestling making their United States debut, G1 USA, and we got to see Kenny Omega become the first ever United States champion for New Japan Pro Wrestling at the end of night two, at the end of the United States Championship Tournament. And it was a hell of a few days, wasn't it?
It was a busy few days, especially the shows. They were really, really good, but also pretty long. They definitely packed a lot in there, and it was a lot like what you'd see in a classic New Japan show. It was the large multi-man tags up front, with things gradually getting more and more intense until you got to the main event of the night. And on that note, I think we got a decently authentic experience out here, which I'm really happy about.
By the way, if we need to warn everybody, it is kind of late out here on the West Coast, especially for me. We have just finished eating Chipotle, so we're hoping we make it through it. That Will's actually sipping on a beer while we're doing this too. We have dogs around us. The air conditioning just turned on, so it's kind of this.
It's guerrilla podcast.
It absolutely is. You know, just sitting here chilling out on the couch and everything. But I will agree that, like, so these shows were both 4 hours long. Mm-hmm. And we knew that going into it. In fact, we thought the Saturday night show, night one, was possibly going to be longer, and we were actually a little bit surprised that it actually went about 340, 345, something like that.
Yeah, they got out of there really fast. It seemed like even some of the people from Access were a little surprised at that too.
Yeah, they were. And so just to set the scene of how this was with us, because we were in part of the media section, so we were off to the side of the stage by some of the other people. Some of the wrestlers would come out and sit there and everything, but we were back in this corner, and we had free reign to go and take pictures basically or do whatever. But anytime a match got done, we immediately went through the curtain and into the little press conference area where they would bring the talent, and we could shoot video, we could take pictures, whatever, but we could not ask questions. That was something where they just came out, they said what they were going to say, and that was that. The only time we could ask questions was after the last match. So, and you can go onto the YouTube channel, to go to youtube.com/between the ropes. We didn't put all the videos there, but we did put some. Like night one, it was the big argument between Cody and Kenny Omega. And then we have the Young Bucks press conference from after night two. So the theme of these shows too was what's going on with the Bullet Club. This was all going to be about the Bullet Club. And can Kenny Omega win? Can Cody become the heavyweight champion in New Japan? So that match took place on night one, with Cody coming up short, and they even teased playing off of the Dominion show where Cody almost threw in the towel for Kenny Omega. Then on this show, it was Kenny Omega coming out with the towel and was going to throw it on Cody, and then tried to get Cody's wife to throw in the towel, but it never happened. Cody lost, and then he got pissed off at Kenny Omega after the show. I mean,
and some good recorders had to die in that situation.
They did, because, oh yeah, so Cody threw this table in anger, and a couple of the Japanese reporters had these little recorders on there, and those things went flying. We were going to put our phones there actually to record too. We were so lucky we didn't.
Yeah, we were talking about trying to get better audio of that, and I think we ended up with just fine audio considering the circumstances.
Yeah, you know, so it was cool, like this whole setup and the way that they do this and everything. So you know, when we talk about the Bullet Club and kind of where their place is in wrestling, it's pretty amazing to see, you know, the power of Bullet Club to this day, because now they've been around for, what is it, like 4 years since they debuted, and they've gone through these different machinations with different people in charge.
They've had three different leaders at this point.
Right, you know, and now they're on Kenny Omega. And the thing that we noticed when we went to the show the night one, like immediately, the incredible line for merchandise. So there was probably, what do you think, about 300 people in line, something like that?
I would say that. And this is also a line for merchandise that was pared down earlier in the day a little bit, because people who went to the meet and greet at noon were able to buy merchandise at that. So this is 300 people that were coming in for the first time, at least, trying to buy merch. It snaked all the way around the building multiple times.
It was crazy. Just, and by the end of the night, like they were out of hats. They were out of almost everything. And then
they were out of almost every size of shirt. We were asking them at the end of the night.
And we came back for night two wondering, like, did they get a refill of merchandise?
No.
No, they did not. And we looked at the shelves and it was like everything was picked through. And like they had to shut down the merchandise stand like probably early on the second night because there was nothing left. There was like a couple of like small size t-shirts maybe
a couple programs.
There were some programs, yeah, but that was almost nothing. So it's incredible to see like how much people want this stuff. And like while it was New Japan merchandise, most of it was Bullet Club. I mean, I just dominated it.
Yeah.
And to see what this group has been all about. And now when it comes to the storylines with New Japan and see how they dominate, you know, Cody has this match on Saturday night against Okada. He ends up losing. He's still the Ring of Honor champion, obviously, but he loses. And then the second night, it's all about Kenny Omega. He wins the U.S. tournament. He beats Ishii in this incredible match to win the title. And then Cody acts like he's going to be pissed off and he takes the title from him, but then he gives it back and says, "You're my brother," in this whole thing. So you still have to wonder, like, what is going on with the Bullet Club?
Well, then Cody didn't show up to the press conference after. He was the only Bullet Club member missing from the presser at that point. And you look around, the Bullet Club didn't lose a match on night two. The Bullet Club swept the night in their matches.
Yeah. It's incredible just to see what this group has done and where they're at right now, especially with like the Young Bucks and like everything that they have done and how much fun that they have. So,
well, in the national recognition, Bullet Club merchandise is now available in Hot Topic. Like you're talking about, anyone listening to this in America can go to their local mall and buy a Bullet Club t-shirt, which is insane considering it's a New Japan. It's a New Japan product, and it's also something that it comes from, like, it's independent. It's almost completely built up by the talent themselves. You're talking about something really built from the ground up that is kind of a part of the do-it-yourself movement in wrestling that especially Omega and the Bucks seem to be very much a part of.
Let's talk about some of the matches. So, of course, main event, night one, we had Cody against Okada. It was a match that a lot of people weren't sure about because they were like, do we see Cody as a main event guy? Does he really deserve this title shot? Yes, he's the Ring of Honor champion. Yes, you have this unique situation where you've got a guy that could be a double champion. They had a really good match. They had a really good match. But this is something that we have talked about, and it's nothing really against Cody, and that he is extremely talented. He is very good. But I feel like, and I think you agree, that there's still like this little thing that is missing when it comes to Cody. And I can't really put my finger on exactly what it is. We have some different ideas, but it's, I mean, and it was a great showing for him against Okada. Okada is incredible to see him up close and personal and to be around him like for the couple days. You know, we'll talk about like even what we did on Friday.
Our visit to the Japanese supermarket.
Absolutely. But just to see Okada up close and personal and how good he is and the way he's able to control so much in the ring. And you know, he had this great match with Cody, but it's still this thing with Cody that I'm trying to figure out is we see him more and more in these big matches and these main events, especially since leaving WWE.
And that he's going to be in Ring of Honor main events for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were talking about this earlier amongst ourselves, and we're kind of like, we almost feel like it's like Cody's almost playing the role of wrestler, I guess, and not being a wrestler.
He does all the things. It's like he's doing everything, and he does it well. Like, I want to specify, like, we're not bad-mouthing him or, like, saying he isn't talented. He's immensely talented, but his mannerisms and the stuff he does is so, it's almost a little bit too big and broad. Like, he's turned it all up to 11 when 10 would have been fine, and honestly 7 or 8 would have seemed natural, but there is a lack of naturalism in his approach that is very, it's overt. He's trying really hard, and that effort is apparent, but not in a good way where you think he's a hard worker, almost in a negative way where you go, you're putting a lot of effort out there, but it's because there's something missing in the rest of your game. And I think until, as people listen to my dog shake on our mics, until he figures out what's missing or what is missing clicks in his head, I think we're going to have this issue with him. And I hope the Ring of Honor World title reign and the variety of opponents he's going to get to work with on top of that company will help to fix what's missing there.
Yeah, because I think it's almost one of those things where it is kind of a trying too hard, like, you should accept me in this role. I am this good. I do deserve this. And it was kind of this weird dynamic, too, when it came to him going into that match, because there were people booing him early on, like, you don't belong in this kind of thing. And
which
then
is pretty different for him. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you've been to indie shows that he's been on, but the couple I've been to, Cody is received with, like, massive cheers. He's,
yeah.
He brands himself as, like, the guy that was bold enough to leave WWE, and he's made a lot of money off of branding himself that way. Like, people love him because of that. So to have him come into an audience that isn't that different than a US indie show audience and have that audience boo him, that's pretty extreme.
Oh, yeah, you know, and we see him in this match, and, like, he's booed early on, but as the match goes on, it... people started to cheer for him more, or at least respect him a lot more. Mm-hmm. I think some of it was people were legitimately afraid that Cody was going to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
That they feel Omega definitely deserves if Okada's not going to have it. Like, that there's this, you know, that title feels like it's the one people deserve now.
Right. And I mean, I think Cody earned a lot of respect on this night. He already has, because, I mean, going around all these different independent groups and, like, what he's done with Ring of Honor so far, this is something a little bit different even from Ring of Honor. Like, this is royalty against Okada. This is New Japan Pro Wrestling. When we talk about the best wrestlers in the world, as good as Ring of Honor is, this is like another step up. This is the high bar.
Well, and it's Okada coming off, or in the midst of, one of the greatest title reigns you will see in wrestling. Like, go get New Japan World and watch Okada from when he won the championship last year through January 4, you know, through the G1, through January 4, through Dominion just this past couple of weeks against Omega, and see what he's done. And people don't want to see Okada lose, because this title reign is something, it's unworldly. It's kind of a once in a lifetime experience.
Sure. And there was the politics of going in this match too, of he's a Ring of Honor champion and he's going to lose clean, which he did. But then on night two, he won this tag match that they did, and he actually pinned Will Ospreay, which was a little surprising when you think about it at first in the moment, but I guess looking back on it, like, no, you know what, he's the Ring of Honor champion, he should go over in this match. It's kind of the give and take of everything,
and it's a junior heavyweight that he pinned, and he's a heavyweight, and there's kind of that distinction in New Japan actually opens them up to being able to get rid of him in a nice, or get him a win in a nice way.
I wonder if that could lead to the two of them going at it in Ring of Honor going forward.
That could be fun, and that could be a really fun championship match if they get around to doing it, or even just a spot show title match if they build Ospreay up enough. That could be a really fun main event, because the work they did in the ring together, they had a few little sequences in that tag match tonight, and they were really good together.
Oh, yeah. By the way, how good of a dude is Will Ospreay? Because he was hanging around the media section. Like, night one, we're there, and we, like, introduced ourselves, and we, like, showed him some pictures that Will took. And he was like, oh, my God, look at that. You know, you got this really cool shot of him, like, in midair, upside down. Yeah. And then night two, he gets done with his match, and he must have just showered, and he's running around frantically, like, can I take this chair? And he's trying to move a chair, like, down to the end of the row, and he's got Chipotle right there.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to wolf down after his match, which I guess he had bought before the show. So he's got this 6-hour-old bowl of Chipotle they can't wait to eat. He's just joking around everybody and doing whatever. You know, and, like, sit in the media section, like, every now and then, like, turn your head, like, hey, there's Kushida, and there's, you know, Tanahashi.
Night one, Tanahashi's sitting in the media section with all of us watching the main events, and you're like, and he's not, like, hobnobbing. Like, he wasn't doing it to be a part of the media. He was doing it because he wanted to watch the show, and that's where you could watch the show from.
Like, Lance Hoyt's there, and Kevin Kelly was hanging around, Don Callis was there, and it was like all these different people just kind of hanging around and seeing what's going on. They do the United States tournament. I was surprised that it wasn't Naito against Omega. I was convinced going into it that was going to be the final.
Well, and with New Japan, they kind of protect those big four. Tanahashi and Okada, ultra protected. And then, you know, kind of the next two on that list right now are Naito and Omega. And you expect them to be protected. So you expect Naito to get wins and you expect Omega to get wins. And I'm with you. I was really surprised. And after watching the main event of night two, I'm fine with what they did. I know Naito and Omega are magic, but Ishii had a great performance against Omega.
He did. They went about, 33 minutes in this match. I mean, this was pure New Japan strong style in what they did. And, you know, lots of knees by Omega to Ishii, you know, to his head, trying to knock him down.
A lot of headbutts from Ishii. A lot of forearms.
They did this crazy spot where the table was set up outside the ring, and it was like, was it like one of those Japanese tables that they had? They're like really hard.
Was not one of the Japanese tables. I was down basically at ringside at this, just shooting over a guardrail, and it wasn't a Japanese table, but it was a thinner American style table.
So they were teasing that, like, Omega was on the apron and Ishii was just inside the ring, and they were teasing he was going to give him a dragon suplex. And they kept teasing it, and you're thinking, nope, not going to happen, not going to happen, not going to happen. And then it happened. Like, at one point, like Omega was pulling on him.
And he held himself from getting pulled off with his teeth.
Yeah,
he was biting the rope.
Yeah, and it was like, everybody pop. And you're like, all right, they're not going to do it. And then they do it. And it was just like, oh my God, what a sick spot that is, man.
Yeah.
Just how dangerous. Like, if you watch that and the way that Ishii comes down through the table and, like, he lands not on the mat. He's on the just flat concrete out there taking this bump. And then he took a dragon suplex in the ring later as well. He took a reverse Hurricane Rana in the ring as well. But, I mean, this is like a mad finish, what they did everything. But Kenny Omega actually got hit with his own finisher with the One Winged Angel by Ishii, and he somehow survived it.
Yeah.
And then he finally was able to connect with it on his own, and he ends up getting the win in just this ridiculous match that just goes to show, like, Ishii is an incredibly talented guy, and it takes two to tango, of course, but you look at where Omega is right now in his career and just the magic that that guy has with anybody he's in the ring with. And he's in the ring with some phenomenal talents as well. But the run that he is on, we talk about the run that Okada is on as champion, the run that Kenny Omega has been on
the last year and a half.
As a guy that before this was a junior, that people had serious question marks about, like, could he be a heavyweight? Could he go against these other guys? Could he be in a position where he is the quote-unquote leader of the Bullet Club? And he has answered everything with flying colors.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I think back to what Kenny Omega was saying to us in the, you know, upstairs loft of a Japanese supermarket on Friday. What he wants to do in wrestling is beyond just doing moves. It's beyond just small things. He wants to tell stories. He wants to invoke emotions. He wants to take people on a journey. And I think you look at the two matches with Okada at this point and you see he takes you on an emotional journey. I don't know that I've seen a more heartbreaking thing in wrestling than Okada getting the ropes when Kenny's finally able to hit the One Winged Angel in that second match at Dominion. And I look and I through Kenny's body of work and I go, okay, that's what he's doing. Like, he's actually doing that. And even tonight, he was telling emotional stories. He was trying to inspire emotion in people. And that's something that we just, I think a lot of wrestlers think about moves or think about think about kind of storytelling in terms of, well, I worked the leg, so my leg hurts for the rest of the match or something like that. But very few think about actual, like, what kind of story are we telling? Is this like a hero's journey? Is this like, you know, and there are so many different stories you can tell in wrestling. And I think Kenny Omega, more than most wrestlers, is open to that possibility that wrestling can be something so much more than it is. And that's showing in his work. And I think that's one of the reasons his work is so far above most other wrestlers is he's not sitting there going, well, I got to get my spots in. He's sitting there going, how can I tell a story? Not just a, my leg hurts, but actually tell a story that someone relates to and emotionally invests in match to match.
Yeah, and when we talked to him on Friday, like, one of the things that we talked to him about was his vision of what he sees professional wrestling, like, and his creativity. And he told a story, and you can watch the video of it, where he's just like, I had this idea, and I want wrestling to be fun. Yeah. And I have this idea of what it should be, and I don't see that in all these different places. But this is what I like. This is what we should be doing, and this is what I am doing, and this is what I'm doing with the Bucks. And look at all the attention that we've gotten off of this because of our creativity and our vision for what we see professional wrestling and what it should be. And by the way, so we go to the press conference, which is on Friday. There was probably a couple hundred people there too.
Yeah.
So this press conference,
like,
I was outside.
Fans, not like media.
Right. So we go, and it was at this Japanese supermarket. Where was this at?
It was like a Marokai in Gardena, California. So it's about 30 minutes from the actual Long Beach Convention Center where they were.
We think like one of their sponsors is the one that maybe set this up.
Yeah.
That's why we're there.
The sponge company that sponsored it, that was hawking their sponges at, like, right next to the merch stand too.
Which is great. But when it got done, they were like, all right, media, you can come with us. And like, they let us up like this back way to the supermarket and like up the stairs, and we're like, okay, where do we go? And somebody came, a Japanese gentleman came where he's like, this way, you know? And it's like, even on the second floor, it's not a supermarket. It's like, there's furniture and knickknacks for sale. And they like just took us down the hall, and they go, all right, just hang out right here. And they brought out four wrestlers, and they like stood against a bright yellow wall.
Yeah.
As we interviewed them.
I gotta say, that bright yellow wall, as I'm sitting there filming all of this, kind of trying, thinking like, oh man, this footage looks great, except for the bright yellow wall.
It is a bright yellow wall. And I love this too, is like, so Will and I were there, and there was, I believe, one other person maybe that spoke English.
Yeah.
And everybody else is a bunch of Japanese reporters. And they were like, all right, ask questions. And like, I asked a question, and then I like looked, and I was like, all right, someone else asked a question, and nobody else did. So you jumped in, and then I asked a question, and it was like,
and then the other guy asked like one question.
Yeah.
Like, two people. Like,
it was so weird. Like, and then, so we were like asking almost all the questions for the four people that came out. Cause it was Kenny Omega. It was Hiroshi Tanahashi. Mm-hmm. It was
Tetsuya Naito.
Naito, and then Okada came out as well. And then like, when we got done talking to everybody, one of the Japanese members of the media came up to him and says, hey guys, thanks for asking all the questions.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I really appreciate it. I didn't want to have to ask something in English or something. And it's like, and his English was fine. Like, I talked to him the last couple days too at the shows, like, said hi to him and talked. And I'm like, you're fine. Like, you could ask some questions. Also, knowing Japanese they might have been happy to get questions in Japanese.
Oh, absolutely. I know they would have. And they had an interpreter there. In fact,
Interpreter did work this weekend.
She did, man. Because even when they did the press conferences, like afterwards, like some of the guys, like Okada on Sunday night, came out and like he just spoke in Japanese. And then when they got done, she turned to all of us.
Yeah.
And she like, here's what he said, you know? And she even has a low voice of like all squatting down and trying to get close to her.
Everyone's trying to get as close to the interpreter as possible.
She's sitting on the floor.
Yep.
Right in front of the table.
Yeah. Did you see the, tonight they had signs on tape to the floor basically that said like official media for like the New Japan report, like kind of the New Japan media members that were there for only them to be on the floor right in front of them.
Yeah. And then we're all kind of like huddled there and we're like, okay, what's she saying? What did he say? You know, we're trying to figure it out. So yeah, the United States tournament, I think overall was really, really good. Night one was solid, picked up on night two. I thought that, what was the match Ishii had in the semifinals? It was against Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh, that was great.
That was a fantastic match. And just,
that's going to get overshadowed with how good Ishii and Omega was. And that's insane because Ishii and Zack Sabre Jr. was nuts.
It was so fantastic. It was just the difference in styles in you know, just mm-hmm. body types and everything. Zack Sabre Jr. being real thin and submission wrestler yeah. against
Ishii. Short, squat Ishii, who is just like this
wrecking ball.
I was going to say brick S-H-I-T house, but I didn't yeah. swear on your podcast.
That's fine. That's exactly what he is. Yeah. And there's this moment where Zack like has got him in a submission hold, like he's got his legs wrapped around his neck and he's choking him. And
well, first he had his arms yeah. and then he wrapped his legs around so he couldn't move him. And then he's grabbing like each limb that he tries to reach the ropes
yeah.
with.
And it's like every time you think Ishii's going to get to the ropes and it's like, nope, you're not going to do that. Nope, you're not going to do that.
Finally, he gets there. But man, that I thought it was done then. I thought we were going to see Omega and Zack Sabre Jr. in the final.
I did too. And we were even wondering, like, because earlier in the day, Cody had said, like, oh, wait till you see the surprise that's going on tonight. And we'd seen, you know, the tension the night before. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking, like, oh, is Cody going to cost him the title or something like that? And Zack Sabre Jr. wins the tournament.
Surprise tonight?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, Ricochet was there, but that's not a Bullet Club
yeah,
surprise.
Yeah, that's not a Bullet Club surprise.
Right. So, yeah, I'm not sure what
strange,
the surprise
like
was.
That other than just Bullet Club's going to win
guess,
some stuff.
I guess the surprise was that he said, hey, man, we're all cool.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Or, hey, man, Marty Scurll's got an umbrella. Surprise.
Yeah. and I mean, you know, and just kind of backtracking too, even though they kind of squashed their beef, I guess, I'm not going to be surprised if we see Cody against Kenny Omega, say, at Wrestle Kingdom in January. Yeah.
No, I definitely think that's a direction they could go in. I think I could see Omega and the Bucks even breaking off from Bullet Club. They are their own little sub-faction, being the elite in Bullet Club. And I could see those three especially being their own unit in New Japan and giving fans permission finally to cheer them and to applaud them, because that's something they're building towards. Kenny Omega isn't really a heel in New Japan anymore. That's not a thing.
Even when he won the tournament, he won the title, he was out in front of the crowd and he was cutting this promo like, don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't do something.
Yeah.
And he's cutting this huge babyface promo. And then when he comes to the press conference and he like whispers to one of the Japanese guys who's got the boom mic, and he basically told him like, put that thing right over my head because I lost my voice.
Yeah.
Because normally they hold it up a little bit higher for the camera yeah. shot. He's like, I lost my voice. Like, it's all scratchy.
And I think when they aired that press conference on New Japan World, looking at some GIFs people posted, that was in the shot. And then I didn't feel so bad too, because that boom mic was in like most of my shots all yeah. weekend. So
so the Jay Lethal against Kenny Omega, night two, I thought was a really good match too. And you know, with Jay Lethal, you know, he's selling the injury to the midsection and yeah. whatnot. And we had even thought, like, okay, if they're going to do this angle, like, after Saturday night, we were talking about, okay, where could they be going with this tournament, especially with the stuff with Cody and Kenny? And we kind of thought, like, could they actually tell the story that despite injury, Jay Lethal
finds himself in the finals, like,
right, and yeah. maybe even wins it, you know, because yeah. he is an American, it's the U.S. title and whatnot. Yeah.
And so, you do say Jay Lethal versus Ishii, and Ishii puts over Lethal in kind of the same way he put over Omega, and I think people are talking about Lethal as a, you know, great guy to hold that title at the end of the weekend.
Yeah. So, and then the tag team match we got on the second night. So Roppongi Vice, once again, going for the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles against the Young Bucks. Another insane match.
Oh, yeah.
To where the Bucks had promised they were going to do like one of the most crazy, ridiculous Meltzer drivers ever in honor of Dave Meltzer, who unfortunately lost his father
this weekend.
Yeah. And they delivered on this in that they did a Meltzer driver where they had, was it Rocky?
I believe it was Rocky.
Rocky in position, yeah. upside down, outside the ring. The other Buck doing this mad dash dive where he jumped, bounced off the top rope, and then did the somersault.
He did the kind of big, 450 or whatever it is. Did the flip into the Meltzer driver. It was like nothing I've seen. It was insane.
He even did like this wild jump just to get to the top rope and get in position to do it. And, but it was another great match. And then afterwards, Roppongi Vice broke up.
Yeah, but not in a, like, acrimony or not in a, like, mean way. They just decided, hey, Trent's going to go up to the heavyweight division. And Rocky is going to
stay in the juniors or do whatever. And it's going to be whatever it's going to be. And then also Ricochet showed up and he took out the Bucks and said, hey, I'm coming for those tag team titles.
They did a lot of work after that tag match.
Yeah, they did.
With the Bucks kind of being attacked by Ricochet and Ricochet laying out the challenge for him and Taguchi to go after the junior tag team titles on the final night of the G1, the night of the G1 finals in August. And then and also mentioning that a certain underground company kept him from the show yesterday.
Right.
With a wink and a nudge to my friends in Boyle Heights. and then you had the Roppongi Vice angle with them breaking up. That was a lot of heavy lifting.
There was, you know, and to see that, you know, and Roppongi Vice has been a really good team, obviously. The Bucks, though, I mean, they came to the presser and they were all upset, like, Ricochet, how dare you ruin our celebration?
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to party out here.
We're the Michael Jordan of
pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And yes, so they were like all upset. And you look at what the Bucks have done. And the thing that I give the Bucks credit for, too, is like they're always having fun with stuff. They're always in character. And they always like know this little way to play it to where it's like this cool little thing and the attention to detail and things that they do and to see it up close and personal in this different environment with New Japan to where after a match, you're immediately going to the back and you are doing a press conference where you're cutting a promo and doing whatever. You know, it's not even like you're taking questions. I mean, there is a reason for everything that you do in New Japan. There's a reason why a guy will lose here. There's a reason why they're cutting the promo and they're mentioning this guy here or doing whatever. There is something behind everything. And to watch them up close and, you know, have their craft, it's pretty incredible what they do.
You know, the Bucks are a great example of what we were talking about a little earlier with wrestlers who play at wrestler and can put on all the mannerisms and do all the things, but it just doesn't quite seem natural for whatever reason. And not naturalistic, like no one in pro wrestling is really all that naturalistic. No one plays it small. You can't. But the Bucks are a great example of guys who you believe. You, they're a little wacky, they're out there, they seem a little insane at times, but they make you believe no matter what they're doing. They find a way to make you believe, and that's something that's really remarkable and something that is very unique to them in the situation that they're in. I can't compliment the Bucks enough in their ability to do that, because there are so many wrestlers who can't, and there are so many really great performers who can't, like we were just talking about with Cody, who seems like he's missing that, but the Bucks have it so well.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk about some broad strokes when it comes to the entire weekend.
Yeah.
Because this was New Japan making their debut in the United States at the Long Beach Convention Center. What was it, about 2,500 people?
About that. I think a little bit less, about 23, but a ton of people in there. And they were selling a small section of this convention center. I mean, they easily could have knocked out one of the air walls in the building and had 5,000 in there.
Oh, yeah. Just put some risers in there.
Yeah.
It would have been incredible. We were talking to somebody from Access, and they said there was people from 38 states that come to the show.
Right. Amazing.
Like, we met somebody listens to the podcast, Bill Dixon, who was like, I came from Nebraska. And we saw a guy like on Saturday night that said, I came from Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And it was like, then we find out like 38 different states. And like they said, half the crowd was just locals.
Yeah.
And the other half was people that came, that visited from out of state.
And the locals, I mean, you're talking hardcore locals. I know a lot of the people that I run into shows out here, going to shows in the L.A. area. I run into them at shows a lot, gave a lot of hugs, told a lot of people hi. But even that, you didn't have all of the locals you could have gotten. And it's worth noting, they didn't promote this show locally. They weren't hitting the pavement, doing the radio stations. You know, there weren't New Japan stories on the evening news or anything like that. Like there could have been, like you get when Ring of Honor even comes to town, where they've got, a Ring of Honor person on your TV news in the morning or something. No, they didn't promote the show locally. This was all hardcores. They didn't have to. They bought tickets before local promotion could happen. And it's kind of remarkable, because you go, well, if this is the base, if this is your downside, what could your upside be here? Because there were people who wanted to come to this show that couldn't, that tickets just weren't available. Same person from Access was telling us they were checking StubHub just to kind of see how the show was doing. And there were so few tickets on there. All the tickets were grabbed real quick by hardcore fans. People weren't selling their seats for this show.
Yeah, and you know they're going to be coming back in 2018.
Yeah, they announced that tonight.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where they're going to be. I would assume it would be in California. I mean, Kenny Omega was talking about, hey, we're going to come back and we're going to do 20,000.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they're going to try a 20,000 seat building. I think that would be kind of foolish, quite honestly. I'm not saying they couldn't do it, but
it's a big leap. They would need some real indicators as far as New Japan World subscriptions and things like that to think that they could make that leap.
But they can come back, and I think they could do 8,000 to 10,000.
Yeah.
If they find the right building, whether it's in that same one or not. But they're going to come back and they're going to do another really good show. And I think they're smart too in saying, we're not coming back in 2017.
No, we're not coming back in November or something. That they're going to make fans wait for it and want it, and hopefully make it an annual kind of July tradition that they always come back the first weekend of July or the last weekend of June, because fans will wait for that. Fans will get, you know, they will get really excited about that period between Dominion and the G1 starting. That means we get the shows in the United States. Fans that just watch at home will get excited because it means that they get to watch New Japan before they go to bed and not have to stay up for like 8 hours to watch it.
Yeah, you know, and plus, you know, like the Long Beach Convention Center has their own rules. And part of those rules were no signs and no streamers. Like, that's why you didn't see that on the show. I don't know if they would have allowed it anyway, but the building said, no, you can't have that stuff. And the crowd, especially on night one, was extremely respectful, like acting like a Japanese crowd.
Yeah.
And I don't think the crowd really acted up in any which way either night.
I think one of the New Japan officials we talked to this weekend said it in a great way. He's like, this crowd was respectful of the workers and they respected themselves the way a Japanese crowd does. Like they like no one acted a fool almost any nights. I mean, the most, I would say the harshest this crowd got and the worst it got was probably being a little mean to Billy Gunn, who did an admirable job against Tanahashi in his match. Like, he did just fine, but no one really wanted Billy Gunn versus Tanahashi to happen.
And by the way, in the middle of that match, and your fine work getting pictures, got full-on Tanahashi behind.
Yeah, that's going in the private collection. Tanahashi is a beautiful man.
And, like, I know you. We were. That was the one thing. Like, if we could meet somebody and just say hi to or do something, we were like really hoping to meet Tanahashi. We just didn't have that opportunity.
We got to talk to him at the presser. Like, right? You know, we were around him plenty.
We just wanted like a private moment, just a brief 30 seconds or something.
I would have taken a candlelight dinner, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
You just wanted a piece of his hair. That's all it was. We wanted a strand of hair. It just wasn't going to happen.
I could clone him.
And you would have tried to, I'm sure. I thought that, you know, the way the crowd reacted, the way that the show came off. I mean, it was a major league setup with the lighting and the look and the stage.
Second best production I've seen in the United States. Second only to WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the thing right. I said this year, I'm like, the thing Ring of Honor gets wrong, even with their nice stage, they won't bring in a follow spot operator. It doesn't cost that much to hire one guy and rent one spotlight. And they won't bring him in. So entrances always look weirdly dark. Or when people fight in the crowd, it looks weird and dark. They have a nice lighting rig now. It's still weird and dark. Man, New Japan had two follow spot operators, and I was grateful for them because I went and stood up next to them during matches to take pictures.
I think one of the guys that was working this was like, oh man, this is so good. We've got to step it up for Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you know what? Ring of Honor should look like this, quite honestly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
They're not far off.
They're not. You know, it just depends. Like, if Sinclair gives a little bit more money towards production, that's the thing we've always talked about with Ring of Honor. It's just the production. You know, do a little bit more.
And it's improved so much in the last year.
Oh, absolutely.
They've taken leaps and bounds, but they can still do better. And they hopefully will. Like, hopefully this is a little motivation to them. Like, wow, we could really make this look even better.
Yeah, I think when you talk about like the expectations for these shows, and obviously they were extremely high when it comes to the fans that were coming out there, and from our perspective, and it was a live perspective, obviously, you know, we didn't get to see or hear the announcers or how the TV broadcasts were, but I think there were some people that had these ridiculous expectations, and I hope that they went into it, or when they ended the weekend, they say, hey, these were really good shows. I mean, not everything is going to be Dominion, like on that level, but
and
everybody,
you're not going to get two in a row.
Right. You know, and everybody came out and they worked extremely hard. And I thought, you know, these shows were a great representation of what New Japan is. Mm-hmm. And you got to see the tag team titles change hands. You got to see a world championship match with Okada. You got to see Kenny Omega, you know, win this tournament to become the first United States champion, and ending the weekend with this ridiculously good match that I think would have to leave you on a high note.
Yeah, have to leave you on a high note. And I would say, you know, the final three matches in night one, and then the two tournament match, or the three tournament matches in night two, I don't know what more you could ask for from this tournament. Yeah, okay, Jay Lethal and Adam Page left a little bit to be desired, just because it was meh. It was fine. It was
right.
They did the wrestles, but it wasn't anything breathtaking. But you got into the end of night one and things really picked up, and you got into the end of night two and things really picked up again. And New Japan put its best possible foot forward, with the possible exception of something like booking Billy Gunn. That I think would be the only misstep. And even that, like I said, I think he performed admirably. He did.
Yeah.
Fine.
You can question that one, and that's perfectly fine. And even Billy kind of got it.
Yeah.
And
even at the press conference,
yeah.
he's like, I don't really know why I'm here.
He was kind of jovial about it, yeah. You know, or even like when they introduced the eight people in the U.S. title tournament, Juice Robinson said, hey, I get it. I'm the underdog here. I know it.
Yeah.
You know, but doesn't mean that we're not going to have a great show. It doesn't mean I'm not going to try.
Even after he lost in the tournament, he said, you know, this is still a big night, and we're still going to, you know, New Japan is still making history tonight. He seems to be on that path of things. I don't think Juice is going to win a lot of matches in the G1.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But he's still going to have, he knows like what the path is. Like, hey, man,
yeah.
Look where I was before, even before I got here in NXT, to how far I have gone already here in New Japan and yeah. Where I could be, you know, because now I'm having better matches. They are kind of getting behind me. You can see these little baby steps. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing with Adam Page.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he loses in the tournament, and then like out of nowhere, they do the six-man tag team match on the second night, and Adam Page is the one that scores the victory.
Yeah. Over War Machine and Michael Elgin.
Right. So, you know, that's a big win for Adam Page, and see what he does, you know,
yeah.
And he needed that kind of where he was at right now. I think the one guy that we can sit there and go, this was a surprise that we didn't really see any big win from him over the weekend, was Naito.
Yeah. It was interesting to see Naito lose, you know, at Los Inger Nobilis Japan. I butchered saying that.
Sure.
But yeah, they lost on night two as a full team, and then Naito lost on night one as well in the tournament. Like we both talked about, that being a big surprise, probably the surprise of the tournament was Ishii going over there. Naito didn't get a lot of wins, and you have to wonder what that means for him going into the G1 and how he's mm-hmm. going to kind of get his groove back.
Because I think some people think that, like, if you kind of play everything out when it comes to the G1, like, he could be the winner of the G1. Like,
yeah.
It could be Naito against Okada at Wrestle Kingdom next year in the main event.
Absolutely.
And then what does that do for Kenny Omega? Because he is the United States champion. So
yeah.
Would he go against, would they continue something with maybe with Cody, or would they go in a different direction?
And where does that United States title even land on the Tokyo Dome? Does it usurp the Intercontinental title and go on second to last? Or is it a, you know, are they kind of waiting to see with that, to see where it's going to place on those cards and how they're going to use it? Is it a main event title? Is it
right.
Not?
And I think it just depends on what the match is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and I don't know if we know Kota Ibushi is back for the G1.
Yeah.
But what if he stuck around? Because we might not see Omega against Ibushi because they're in different blocks. So is that something that
we
maybe...
Can dream.
Exactly. Maybe we will see it. Maybe we'll see it in the final. I don't think so, but hey, you never say never. And that could be a match that they could go back to at Wrestle Kingdom. They could go back to that match anytime they want, and people will be super excited.
Yeah.
Here's another, like, overlying question too that I don't think has been answered necessarily, but there's so many question marks about Kenny Omega's future. Like, is he going to be staying with New Japan? Like, you know, he signed this 1-year deal, you know, this past year. So people wonder, like, will they pull the trigger on him winning, you know, the heavyweight championship? And what does this mean for him going forward? Is he going to stay? Now, I think there's going to be a lot of people that say, well, they had him win this tournament. He is the first ever United States champion. So he's sticking around. I don't know that yet.
I don't either. I would find it hard to think. I mean, I know money moves a lot of people's barometers, but I would find it really hard to think that Kenny won't stick around simply because he seems to enjoy the creative atmosphere of New Japan so much more, and something like WWE, which I think would be the only alternative there, it's creatively stifling for so many guys. They get told, you know, you have to wrestle in X style, you have to do things this way, this is the story we're telling with you, and you aren't really a part of that. Where in New Japan, Kenny Omega seems really creatively engaged and inspired, and like he has so much to do with the storytelling behind his character.
Well, look at the Young Bucks, who actually were extremely close to going to WWE not too long ago.
A couple times, really.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And they stuck around with New Japan, and look what they have done. And now they have created this incredible brand.
Yeah.
Even not only with Bullet Club, but with the Elite, with Kenny, and what they've done. And, you know, YouTube sensation and social media and merchandise sellers and all these different things that they have done. And they have proven, like, you don't have to go to WWE. Does that mean they're not going to go there? I don't know. No. They've left the door open, and maybe they will down the line. I think it's one of those things now. It's like, you know what? I've got so much on my bump card, and I can fulfill this while I can really still go at like a very high level. And then maybe when I feel like I'm 15% off of that, and I want to knock this off my bucket list,
yeah,
I will go to WWE, and I wonder
what happens.
Yeah, maybe the same thing is for Kenny Omega. I don't know. I think WWE is interested. I don't know how interested. I don't know how much money they would offer. You would have to think it would be a lot of money. But I don't know. But I mean, I think that you look at him too. Like you said, he loves the creativity that is afforded him in New Japan. He loves the opportunities that he has there.
Yeah.
He seems fulfilled by doing the things that he is doing.
And at a point, I mean, how much more money do you need at that point? And money's always good, but what opportunities is WWE going to give him that he's not going to get? Okay, you might get paid a little bit more. I think WWE large scale pays more than New Japan, but your merchandise, well, it's going to be in the same Hot Topic, whether it's in the WWE row or the row right next to it. You're going to be seen on national TV. I mean, Access isn't the USA network, but honestly, TV's not exactly the medium that matters the most now anyways. And I think Kenny is kind of finding a way in a new era of wrestling. One of those guys that is doing it themselves. Like I said earlier, the do-it-yourself movement in wrestling is becoming such a strong thing. And New Japan is embracing that and running with it and kind of running with this new era and allowing their wrestlers to run with it more than New Japan itself is corporately. Yeah.
I think one of the big things for guys, if they want to go to WWE, is to say, I was at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be the end-all be-all for people, and if they want to do it, I think everybody knows the stories going in there now and saying, hey, you do have to realize this, this, and this.
Yeah.
So you can get frustrated if you go there, but hey, you knew that going in.
Yeah. You know the creative frustration is a part of this job.
Right, and it's going to be, you know, for the foreseeable future. It's not the end of the world, and you can still have a lot of fun doing it, but it's going to be a different experience from you. And for some people, they can buy into that. And for some people, considering what they have been doing and how they have found ways to do other things, you know, on their own by not being with WWE, it's going to be a hard pill to swallow. But it is incredible to see the growth of independent wrestling, or let's put it this way. Let's not even say independent wrestling necessarily, non-WWE wrestling, and to see where everything is at right now, because New Japan is the number two company in the world.
Yeah, they're the number two company in the United States.
They are.
Like, they're bigger than Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor comes to Southern California. I don't know that they can draw that house. 2,300 people. I just don't. One night, I don't think Ring of Honor could do it, and they never run Southern California. New Japan is the second biggest company in the world, second biggest in the United States, and that's really impressive, especially in the U.S. market, because they're
yeah
the they're New Japan. Like, they're they are not ours.
So, do you want to give any quick predictions for G1?
Oh, that is way too tough. I would have to look at the blocks and everything else.
It is tough, man.
I think Okada does really well. I want to see Omega and Ibushi in the finals, but I'm with you and I doubt it'll happen. And after Naito lost, I'll say, like, quick, just off the top of my head, I could see Naito winning the G1 and Naito and Okada main eventing the Tokyo Dome this year.
I might be far-fetched because this has never happened before. I wonder if Okada is going to win it. I think the first time a champion has won it. And then he calls his shot on who he wants to face at Wrestle Kingdom.
That would be impressive. That would be amazing.
Well,
and Okada's the champion to do it with what they're doing with him right now on this unreal terror of he's at the top of his game and basically unbeatable. I mean, I don't know that I'd have him run the table if I were booking it, because that takes a lot of suspense.
Oh, I have an idea.
Yeah?
Well, August 12th, the third match in the trilogy.
Yeah.
Him against Kenny Omega. Remember, it's a 30-minute time limit match. Now, some people wonder, like, could they, quote-unquote, break the rules and, like, they go 30 minutes and they haven't had it finished, so they give them extra time? I don't think you do that.
But a tie in the G1, I mean, a tie in the G1 is just that. It's a tie. You each get a point or something
right,
like that.
And that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I would go draw.
Wow. Another one.
I would have a draw, and then, because that one's a 30-minute one, and just say, we're bringing it back. Like, Okada wins the tournament and says, you know what? I've beaten you once, but the last two times,
I couldn't get it done.
And I have something to prove, and I have to prove that. And I'm going to prove it at Wrestle Kingdom. Last year, I beat you on this show, and I'm going to do it again. And by the way, it's going to be a 90-minute time limit.
What if they also, I mean, I like that. What if Omega just won? What if he found a way to put Okada away in that match in 30 minutes? And that's even more heartbreaking in a way, because he did it when the title wasn't on the line.
Right.
He got it done.
Maybe that's the impetus for saying, now I deserve that title match, because I beat you once and now I can beat it when the title is on the line.
And Okada still wins the G1. Like, Omega just wins that match. Okada still wins the G1 and says, no, you beat me. You are coming to Wrestle Kingdom with me, and we're going to finish this.
Could you see a scenario where Omega won the G1 again?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's out of the question. In that case, I want that Omega versus Ibushi match.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they ever did that, too, you'd have to wonder what would happen with the United States Championship.
Yeah.
Because obviously he wants to challenge for the heavyweight championship.
Well, and the way they've talked about this United States Championship, it seems like we could see that defended around the United States. Like, we could see that in multiple promotions, not just New Japan, and probably not just New Japan affiliate Ring of Honor.
Yeah, because, like, Kenny was bragging about, hey, you know what? This title means as much as any championship that we have here.
And he then went on to say mean things about the NEVER title and the Intercontinental title, and was like, this title won't be a failure like those ones, and I'm going to make sure of it. And it's weird, because when Kenny says that, I trust him. Like, I'm actually like, oh, okay, so they have ideas.
Right. So how good of a day was Sunday for us? Because we're going to end it on this note. We started our day with, thanks to a good friend of yours, hooking us up with passes to Disneyland, where I have never been. Yeah. And you have not been in almost 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
Even though you used to work there.
And I lived down the street. Like, we could have walked there if we weren't so lazy.
Right. So we started the day at Disneyland and then got to do a bunch of different things before people really plowed in there. Enjoyed ourselves at the park. Chilled out. Got something to eat, and then went and saw New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, a really banner day in life there. A whole lot of fun things happened, and I got to run around like a madman at New Japan Pro Wrestling, between running back for the press conferences and going everywhere I could around the arena to try and to not just try, but to get to take pictures, because no one ever told me I couldn't be anywhere, which I was expecting.
It was so funny, like, watching, because I'm sitting back in a corner, like, to the side of the stage, and I'm sitting there just kind of watch the show, and then I can could see this head like quickly moving up like towards the ring. And it was you, like, were you, because like you were running but squatting at the same time to try to get like right up to the guardrail to get pictures and whatnot. And it was funny just watching that. You wore a black shirt tonight on purpose, like to be stealth, to kind of zip in and out. And you went up like some of the risers or some of the areas where they had hard cameras and whatever things. So you got a bunch of different angles and everything. And you're going to have those up. By the way, everybody can follow you on Twitter. It's
At Will Pruitt with one L.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll have the photos up there. You have a photo gallery and everything. And
I've got night one up already, and I'll get night two up in the next few days as I get a chance to go through and search through them and probably watermark them somehow. Right.
And then, like, you've tweeted a few pictures out, like some of your really spectacular ones that you noticed real quickly, like, I got to put this out here right now.
I was quickly able to. I took so many pictures during, like, the main events. I have to go back and look at them again and actually see what I have.
Yeah, so, no, today was a great day. I thought it was a great weekend for New Japan. We had a lot of fun, and
And they really, they did it right. Like, they treated people well.
Absolutely.
Treated the fans well. They seemed to really try to put their best foot forward. They cared a lot more than some other promotions care sometimes when they come into town. And there wasn't a sense of, you owe us for being here. There was, throughout the entire weekend, kind of a, hey, we are grateful that you would support us this way. Thank you, everyone, for coming out.
They even did meet and greets on both days, and it was only $20.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous. It was only $20.
Yeah, because that meet and greet too, I mean, you know, you're getting to meet the stars of New Japan, obviously, and with like the meet and greet type thing, it's not like you're paying extra for pictures or anything like that. You are, that's all inclusive, and you get to meet all of those guys, and that's awesome for people that went to it. I'm sure people had a really great time.
It was also awesome for people that were hanging out in the middle of the show on Sunday night over by the concessions, and Yoshitatsu was hanging out over there, willing to shake hands and take pictures with anybody and everybody.
And trying to hawk those Bullet Club Hunter shirts, which were the only piece of merch left.
God bless Yoshitatsu.
Yeah. So. How are he and Billy Gunn in a faction? I'm just confused.
That's one of the mysteries of the world that we have to try to decipher now.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks everybody for listening. Will, I appreciate everything that you have done for me this weekend and being a great host and having fun going out to New Japan shows. So
I'm really glad you got to come out. Thanks for bringing me along and just being a pretty good house guest.
I tried not to do anything. I tried to not, you know, like wet myself in the bed or kind, you know, anything like that. So try to be a good guy. So appreciate everybody for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast. You can do that on iTunes, rate and review it. You can also find us on Google Play, on SoundCloud, and on the TuneIn app, all the different places that you can find podcasts. Appreciate that. And also please support us on Patreon as well. Go to patreon.com/between the ropes, and you can follow me on Twitter. It is @BrianFritz. Appreciate everybody again for listening. We'll talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.